get to know the artist behind the epic melodies, songs, and beats. Celebrating the best new music from around the world. This is the A State of Trance Podcast.
Hey, what's up? My name is Ruben Ronde and welcome to another edition of the State of Trance Podcast. And this week we're joined by, let's keep it very formal, Andrew Liggert from Portadown, Ireland.
Hello.
Better known as Snyder, because that's very confusing for us Dutch, because when you see Snyder, you think straight away, that man is from Holland and he likes football. That's, I think, what it isn't actually. Here in the studio because his brand new album, Bring a Noise, just showcased on the show. The first album that he released since 2015, which was Everything Changes. I'm going to talk about that in just a little bit as well. But first of all, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. How are you doing?
Really good. Yeah.
Gearing up for a busy summer?
Yeah, lots of gigs coming up. USA, 3 gigs in the USA coming up. And yeah, lots happening in August as well. Buenos Aires, some festivals to announce hopefully very soon. Yeah, busy.
And no more weight on your shoulders as you've finished an album. It's done and dealed, and it's good. CDs are pressed, finals are being pressed, everything's done.
It's finished. I don't know about done. It'll never, if you're like sort of like me, it'll never be done, but you just have to come to some sort of a level of acceptability where it's like, okay, we need to move on here.
Gotta hate having an artist's mind because it's never finished.
Creative mind is.
And then you're like, okay, I'm gonna bring it to the CD press right now, and then you realize, oh, this master could have been a little bit less loud, or it is what it is.
There's always going to be some, man. You just, like I said, there has to be some sort of level of acceptability.
Yeah, very true. All right, so I have a couple of fans from the questions, but we always start the podcast with diving a little bit into the history. What I would love to know from you, how did you get in touch with dance music? Where did it all start for Snyder?
Crazy story, actually. For me, when I went to high school, I used to walk the same route home every day, mm-hmm. and there was a guy who lived around the corner from my house, and he had like a garage with the door open, and every day I used to walk past this garage, and he would have like the music, you know, pumping out from the garage, and I was like really, really intrigued, because at that time I didn't know what dance music was. I was more into like Nirvana and grunge type music.
How old were you then?
I think like 13 maybe, okay, at the time. And you know, the Seattle sound, Pearl Jam, Nirvana and all was very prolific then. And I was kind of like intrigued by what the sound was. So one day I just said, you know what, I'm just going to muster up the courage and go over and ask him what it was. And he brought me in, showed me all the records and the tunes. And from that moment, I was completely infatuated. I mean, I can remember going home and telling my mum literally like an hour after meeting him that I wanted to be a DJ. And she was like, where's this come from? What are you talking about? And at that time, like decks were very expensive. Like 12 tens were probably still the same price what they are now, what they were back then. And it was like a lot of money. So my mum, she got me the first set of Soundlab belt drive
ones,
turntables.
The tempo would go up and down all the time.
If you could mix on those, you could mix on anything. And, you know, she got them on higher purchase, paid them off for me. And she actually said to me recently that it was the best investment she ever made.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's amazing. So she has a big part in your career, actually, to kick everything off.
Well, she was instrumental in, you know, giving me the tool to see if the passion went somewhere. And something very embarrassing, actually, whenever I first met the guy, I actually thought that you bought a record with a beat on it and the other record was with the music.
The melody, so you were blending everything together.
That's what I actually thought, and it's kind of embarrassing, but like that's what I thought he was doing when I was looking at it until he explained everything to me. Yeah, my parents had like a small shed at the back of the house, and I put the turntables in there, and every day after school from like, you know, 3:30 to 10:30 at night, I was in there with my head down mixing absolutely everything. I mean, hip hop, psytrance. I didn't even know what I liked.
Dance music in general. Just you wanted to mix everything together, basically.
Yeah, well, there was a small record store from where I lived, and they didn't sell like a particular style. It was more like just a mixture of everything. So I would just go in there and buy whatever, and then just try and mix it, and that's how I developed my style, really.
So that's when you were like 14, 15 years old, mixing the whole day through.
14, around 14.
And then what happened after that? Because then you started mixing. How did you start going to venues? Did you go to parties? What was your first show, for example?
Yeah, I mean, at 14 years, when I was 14 years old, I looked very, very young. I think I looked about five. So I was kind of like getting into a venue that age was nearly impossible for
fake
me.
Fake ID, not even, they were like, no.
Not even an option. They would just look at it and go,
no,
mate, not a chance. Like, it was just wasn't going to happen. So to be honest, I was kind of transitioning from the grunge music to the electronic music, and I was kind of half in and half out of the different scenes. Yeah. I didn't go really all in until I was about 15. I discovered hardcore music, and that's when the hardcore scene was massive in Northern Ireland. You know, you had everyone that was coming over from Scotland was more or less hardcore orientated, all the DJs we were seeing. Even Carl Cox back then was a hardcore DJ, and he was playing like the Hellraisers and those sort of parties in Belfast. And I didn't get to go to those until I was a wee bit older, but I was still too young, but I managed to get in. They were a wee bit looser at those parties to get in. And that's whenever my love, that's whenever my love for hardcore started, and I became completely obsessed with hardcore music.
So from that moment on, you were just spinning hardcore, hardcore music, which is like up-tempo stuff of 170, 180 BPM,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, bands like Ultrasonic, QFX. We spoke about this early. Davey Forbes was one of my idols back then. Still is. But like back then when I first started, he was like making some amazing records on Dwarf and stuff. And funny enough, that's where my name Snyder comes from, my love for Dutch hardcore. The Dutch hardcore sound was a lot different than the... The UK hardcore was more really melody based and happy and like, you know, bouncy, where the Dutch stuff was like really raw.
Distorted basses and
Like obviously you had like Paul Alstack and DJs like this that made more commercial sound, but he also played like more harder stuff as well. So that, I was more drawn to the more raw stripped back sound, and that's the sound that I fell in love with and I was sort of pushing. There was only one DJ in Northern Ireland playing that sound, and I followed him around and like listened to his tapes and stuff and took inspiration from him. His name was DJ Bin Man.
Yeah.
What a name, Bin Man. But
Bin Man, do you think he's still, is he still playing, you think? Or
no, I don't think he is. I think he's like, he owned a record shop in Ballymena, I think, called Radioactive Vinyl, I think was the name. But after that closed, he kind of fizzled out.
And then that period went by as well, the hardcore period, because then you fell in love with trance music, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you still remember making that switch?
To be honest, it wasn't like a straight switch. I went through like a few various styles before I settled on straight up trance, if you want to call it. I went through a phase of playing like what would be known back then as psy trance, but it's completely different sound to what it is now. You had guys like Pablo Gargano pushing like Eve records, Noom records. It was more like a fast paced psy trance, but it had the harder, you know, fast beats of like hardcore, if you like, but also the melodies of what I would call trance now. And, you know, I know John Askew, for example, was a big fan of that sound back in the day. And that was really...
Do you remember the Forbidden Paradise series of Tiesto?
Yeah.
Yeah, is that the kind of sound that it was? Like 150 BPM, like fast paced, old school trance, basically.
Yeah, really, really repetitive, like driving music. Hypnotic, if you like, slightly. The melodies were there, but not full-on happy, cheesy melodies. Were more hypnotic sounding. And for me, I was like, okay, this is great because I love the sound and the aggression of this music, but I also love this wee hint of like melodic touch that it has. And then Ferry Costin came along and changed everything. When I heard his music, it was like, wow, what is this? It's like, you know, it has like the Gary Ellis stuff, had the aggression, had classy melodies, had all that. And I think Furry and Paul Van Dyk, his sets were instrumental in me making the full transition. But yeah, I've went through a lot of styles, and I think that's kind of like apparent in my music and the music that I still play now. It's always influenced by different stages in my career, because those timestamps are still, I'm still very passionate about them all. I would never dismiss my musical past. I know some guys are like, you know, embarrassed about stuff they played years ago, but not for me. I think it's all part of your journey, your musical journey.
Definitely. Yeah. It makes you unique as an artist as well, I guess. Yeah. But when was the moment that you decided not only to DJ, but also decided to start making music?
Again, that wasn't something that really happened naturally. I had no interest in making music. I was just all about the DJing. And then I met Jordan Suckley on MySpace. So Jordan.
MySpace. Wow, yeah, okay, MySpace. This is a throwback.
Yeah, so
a lot of people out there. MySpace used to be a platform.
Yeah.
<it's laughs> where you could put on your music. And there was a horrible thing called a top 8. And if you didn't put your friends into your top 8, the friendship was over.
You were gone, yeah.
You were gone, that's it. So that's where you met Jordan.
Yeah, well, basically, it started out at... It was impossible for me to get any gigs in Northern Ireland because back then it was all about who you knew. It wasn't about how good you were. There were so many people, bedroom DJs, who were all amazing, do you know what I mean? And it was just like the scene was like very small in terms of club shows. Mm-hmm. And I knew realistically if I ever wanted to play in a club, I was going to have to put my own nights on. So me and my friend, we started to run our own nights and we brought Garth Emery over one of the first nights. And I just recently met Jordan on MySpace and Jordan... He came over and played. I was the first person to bring him to Ireland, believe it or not, to play. Yeah. And he had just been signed to Good Grief for grooming him at that time to be sort of like the follow-up to Eddie Halliwell. And, you know, Jordan came over and stayed in my house and stuff and we chatted and whatever. And he was like to me, man, the scene's changing. If you want to like be noticed and you want to stick out, you need to make your own music. So Jordan is sort of responsible for me, you know, taking that turn and getting a studio set up and starting my own music. And that's what I did. I just like bought the studio set up with the money I had saved, put my head down and started to make music just because of that to stand out.
That's great. And because it was different times because your first release was in 2009, also Good Grief. Mm-hmm. The Future. Future.
Yeah. Signed to Jordan's label.
Signed to Jordan's label. That's I guess that's how it came about.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to get into that moment that you were like, okay, confident enough to release something?
I guess like back then, it's like any new producer, when you're making music back then, everything sounds amazing to you just because you're making it. Doesn't mean it's good, but it's just
and your
because,
friends lie to you.
Yeah, because, you know, it's because you're actually making it and you think that it's good because you're doing it, but it doesn't mean it's good. So kind of like, you know, I'm not tarnishing the releases, but when I look back now on the quality is like nowhere near where I wanted to be, but like I'm not naive to think that I was going to jump in and be like, you know, an amazing producer from the off. But
that's an interesting day because I think the same thing. But then again, then I come back to something that you said earlier that you shouldn't be embarrassed of your roots.
Yeah.
Like if I listen to my old stuff on Spotify, I'm like, wow, this is absolutely horrible. It sounds shit. The melodies are bad. But still, it's part of your journey where you are right now.
Of course. Like, I mean, I think like for me, personally speaking, I picked the production up like very quickly because I had the knowledge of being a DJ. Yeah, yeah. For so long.
You knew what works on the dance floor.
I knew. And I think like there's a lot of, this happens now. Like you'll have like a lot of guys now who are absolutely amazing producers, but their music just doesn't transpire to the dance floor because technically they don't have that, what should happen here, what people want to happen here and vice versa. You know, people can make like really raw music that doesn't sound that good, but when you play it out, it just destroys the place.
That's true. Yeah.
And I think that knowledge, if you have that knowledge of the dance floor and you're around a producer, you have the package. Like, and that's very rare these days, I think. Yeah. So for me, that's what I was aspiring to be. Always like the rounded producer, the music was like, you know, really recognized and good, but also could play it on the dance floor and it was going to be, you know, go off.
Yeah, because I guess at most of the festivals right now, the people that you see DJing are actually producers.
Yeah.
They've learned a little bit how to entertain a crowd, but they don't really know how to read a crowd necessarily. Like, or they have like a pre-programmed set and that's what they stick to and they don't read. Like if something doesn't really go well, I guess they don't turn right or left. They just keep on going straight.
Yeah, you have to, like if the crowd's flat, you have to know when to turn, like, you know, drop that record that you know is never fails.
Yeah.
And also different countries are going to have a different sound, like we spoke about earlier. And it's kind of like, you have to know that as a DJ, you have to do your research. You have to know when you're going into a territory, what's going to happen. Like, I think in the past, for a while, over lockdown, something that I realized that I used to try and go out all the time and try and educate the crowd. And sometimes people just want to hear their favorite tunes. Yeah. You know, they just want to hear that
they
classic.
They don't want to be educated.
Yeah, they just want to have a good time because they're paying the money to go out to a party to see a DJ and they want to go home with a smile on their face. Not 99% of the people don't care about being educated to underground music. They just want to have a good time. So you have to have that in your mindset. And that's something that I kind of changed over lockdown, that I was just going to have a bit of fun again and just like bring it back to like my old school roots and back to where I was when I started DJing, where I didn't, I was mixing everything and doing everything and kind of like, you know, not getting caught up in the bubble of what I should be doing or should not be doing and what other people thought, because you're never going to please everyone, man. You just have to like go with your gut and,
that's very true.
And have fun.
That's what brings us to your album, because you played a guest mix on the State of Trance showcasing some of the tracks on there, and we already saw you some rolling out some tracks already in the last few months that are being part of the album. And before Corona, you were more focused on the uplifting sides of things. Of course, your remix for Ben was absolutely fantastic. Now during lockdown, I guess what you were just saying right now is just go back to your roots and just make whatever you want to make, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think lockdown gave everybody a chance to think and recoup and reset. And I mean, spend
helicopter view, see what you were doing. Yeah,
yeah. Like when you're involved in the scene, I don't think people realize that the bubble you're in and the intensity of things and how things is like. It is a career, but it's also a business at the same time. And you have to be business minded, and you can't take your eye off the ball as such. And every move that you make has to have like a business sense as well, because you're trying to build a career at the end of the day and maintain credibility, which can be very tough to balance that. And I think lockdown gave me the chance to like take a step back and sort of think about, right, where am I going to go next here? What's my next step? What music am I going to be making after this is all over? Am I going to be continuing on with the same stuff or whatever? So I just like cleared the slate, started listening to old sets again while I was like doing stuff to my house and like, you know, just enjoying.
The stuff that brought you into dance music.
Yeah, just enjoying. Like I sort of neglected that side of like listening to new music because I was so wrapped up in my own thing, doing my own thing, playing my own music, focusing on finishing my own music, that I don't even really go listen to very many promos anymore. I find the odd one, but I'm not like invested in the research side of things as much as I was. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to go back to just like enjoying other people's music and what made me fell in love with the genre and whatever at the start. So for me, that gave me a chance to do that. And that's where the Bring the Noise album comes from. It's a mixture of basically everything, and it's a bit of freedom to do everything that has influenced me over the years of DJing right up until now and what I hope to put out in the future. So it's a mixed bag of pretty much all sounds and genres and a hybrid.
I think it's great because I know that a lot of fans are very vocal about certain things. Mm. Were you scared of a backlash that people were saying that you were neglecting trance, or you know, how whatever people want to label it?
No, I don't think so. I think like if you have a true fan base and you don't veer too much away, like you're not changing genres or you're doing too much out of the scope, but you're still maintaining that freedom.
Yeah,
people should stand by you. But listen, man, you know yourself, from being online, you can't please everyone. Someone's always there's always gonna be negativity there in some space, and like if you go through your career trying to please everyone, you're going to have a very short career.
Yeah.
You just have to like do what your gut and your instinct tells you at that time.
Yeah.
Man, listen, everybody's winging it. No, there's no winning formula here, because if Absolutely there was, not. We'd be all millionaires. And it's like,
very true. Yeah.
It's like you can just do what you feel like is the best for you. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, but I just trust my gut, man. That's it.
Yeah. But I noticed that a lot of guys from yourself, from Ireland, from Northern Ireland, from Scotland, especially in Great Britain and Ireland, is that pretty much all of the artists that used to be more in the uplifting sides of things are all turning into the old school tech trends kind of sounds.
Yeah.
Wacey, Will Atkinson, Jordan, you said it as well, Brian also. Everybody's turning more into that old school kind of sound. Is that a thing that you talk about with each other, or is it just something that just came about?
Yeah, we have
inspiring each other.
We have a WhatsApp group.
Yeah, really?
No.
It could be. I don't know.
Listen, I think it's more. Well, I'll take Bran for example. Bran has always done like that old school feel, and so have I as well, and Will as well to a certain extent. I mean, it's like we've all been heavily influenced that. I think it's just been brought more to the forefront and it's become more apparent. And like, you know, I think the longevity of a good producer and a good DJ is tweaking your sound to stay what's current, but not investing like too much heavily in what's current, if you know what I mean. You're just tweaking things and you're like moving along, but still maintaining that credibility. I love old school music. I have no quims about saying it. I could play it all day. I've always referenced like older tracks as inspiration for making music. It's always been my thing, and you know, I don't think I'm going to stop, and I'm actually buzzing that it's kind of had a bit of a revival now, because I feel really comfortable with that.
Yeah, sound. Because what you see in England right now is that this old school trance, like the old Ferry Corstens or Vincent de Moors or whatever, everybody's playing those right now.
Yeah, it's kind of like very stripped back with just like a kick and an offbeat bass. I mean, the more refined producers out there are probably looking at it going, well, I could make that in 10 minutes, you know, and they probably could. It's probably like three channels, half of it. But at the same time, people love it. People's dancing to it. And, you know, the goal here is to make people dance.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's very true. You shouldn't overcomplicate things. You know, you're there to make dance music and make people dance.
That's it.
And that's it.
Black and white.
That's very true. That's what it is. That's a nice insight. We're already 20 minutes in, so that means that we going to dive into some questions that are that came in. It was quite a few, actually.
Oh, God. Here we go.
So, yeah, here we go. Get ready. No. First of all, Lizzie Tezil writes, are you excited to play in LA July 8th? We're happy that you're coming. So, I guess that's more a shout-out, but are you excited for that?
Yeah, I really can't wait. Delighted. My first time playing the Academy as well, so it's
amazing club.
It's going to be a good one. I've played Avalon quite a bit, so this is my first time playing the Academy, and it looks like the lights that go around.
The LEDs everywhere. Yeah.
It looks really cool, so I'm excited for that. We have like the Academy on Saturday, and is it Public Works on Friday?
San Francisco.
So
that's a good weekend, definitely. Yeah. Simply Mimi wants to know, when are you coming to New York City?
I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, looking at Paula. No, she's looking at me like,
I think
what?
we talked about something exciting for that, but it's not confirmed yet. So hopefully we'll have news on that later in the year.
In the works.
Yeah.
I hope that works for you and Mimi. Fotis Van Bird wants to know, what's the best festival you have ever played? If you don't say A State of Trance, we'll end this broadcast right now. No, I'm kidding.
Honestly, I think like it is A State of Trance for me. And the reason why is because I think everyone knows it's a complete ID fest. So building up to that show, you have like so much new music, and it sort of sets the tone for the rest of the year about how your music's going to unfold. And my set that I played in March had like, I think like 80% IDs. So it's always exciting.
Yeah.
You know, you're saving all this music up, and then you're getting to play it to a crowd for the first time. And that's what makes it so good. So for me, it's definitely A State of Trance. And then second would be Planet Love in Ireland, because home turf, and it's like, you know, always amazing.
Planet Love, that's a messy festival. Yeah. in a good way, I guess.
Yeah.
I agree with you. With the State of Thrones, that the ID Fest is amazing. Like, everybody's bringing their A game. I did the same. I played out of the 15 tracks I played, it was 10 IDs or at least.
Like, you're listening back to the sets after, and it's just so much fresh music.
Yeah.
And it's so exciting to do that. And even as a music fan myself, to listen back to other DJs playing, and you're getting all that fresh music, it's just like, it's the benchmark.
Like, hey, what's that?
Yeah.
Awesome. Siet van Riel, there he is.
Here he goes. This has to be something.
I don't know what this means, but it's probably a good inside joke. Do you prefer a hashtag VN or a double hashtag VN?
VN stands for Vodka Nights. So me and Sid is my perfect party partner. We used to like, you know, have some amazing times. And yeah, and plenty more coming up, I'm sure. So yeah, we like we always partner up whenever we see each other, and it's always like, it's always a good one. So
really miss him in the music industry, Siet.
Amazing.
He was always someone that brought in something controversial. He always was ahead of the pack also with his music, was also different than anyone else. So Siet, if you're listening to this, we miss you, man.
Radiator, what a track. You remember Radiator? Oh.
Yeah. Actually, this week I bought a few vinyls also with Siet on there. So
dancers question, both.
Okay, both. That's what it is. Giel Beggen wants to know, are you related to the pro football player Wesley Sneijder?
No, absolutely not. The surname,
you're twice as tall as he is as well. So.
The name Sneijder comes from my love of Dutch hardcore and my love for soccer. So the name bridges the gap. So it kind of like touches on Wesley Sneijder, but not related to him.
Awesome. Sam Van Ryder wants to know, are you planning to come to Mexico City?
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, all these cities I hope to play at. I mean, nothing planned so far, but hopefully something comes up and someone books me and we go, yeah.
Yeah, that's the same. That's 2AVFC93 wants to know, any shows in England coming up rather than wrong?
Yes, we have like Summer of Love Festival in August, and I have Let me see what else. Another festival in Newcastle the day after. And what else do we have?
I have to say, England and Northern Ireland, Scotland and Ireland as well, and Wales.
Mm.
The festivals are on point right now. There's so many festivals and
yeah,
people are just going wild. I think it's the craziest crowd in the world right now. It has to be in that part of the world.
For sure. It just reminds me of like late 90s, early 2000s.
There,
yeah, just whenever the whole thing was really exploded and it was like the UK scene was basically the scene.
Yeah.
It was like so much going on and it's happening again, you know. A few more dates to announce. Obviously in the UK, I can't announce them yet. I think we announced EH1 Festival in Edinburgh. Yeah, I'm on that one. Good lineup for that. And a few others to be announced over the next month or so. So yeah,
enough stuff coming on.
Yeah.
Key Dudek wants to know, are you planning a collaboration with Giuseppe or Ali and Philip?
Would love to. I think I've remixed two or three times both artists. I actually did one with Fatty from Ali and Fila for the other Shore album.
Okay.
Was that one?
Yeah.
We did something Full Throttle, it was called, a pretty hard one. So who knows? My door.
Full Throttle.
Yeah. My door and inbox is always open, guys.
I think Giuseppe is also killing it right now. Like he's building a bridge between his own sound and also the Horizon sound, but also the main stage sounds and the reworks, the classics.
He's the man. Yeah. He always has been, always will be.
Yeah, absolutely. Hark Music wants to know, what's the best way to sign a track to your label, After Dark?
Honestly, I've been asked this so many times and I listen to every demo.
Really?
Every demo. And if someone sends me a track and I like it, it doesn't matter your background, name, where you're from, it doesn't matter anything about that. If you have like 30 releases or none, if I like it and I play it my sets, I'll sign it, but it has to be something that I will play. I'll never sign music that I wouldn't play in my set. So yeah. I think, I'm just always on the lookout for something. I don't even know what I'm looking for. Just originality and something that catches my ear.
As soon as you hear something, you're like, okay, this is it. Then you see it on the dance floor already.
I get a lot of emails of people saying, what sound should I make for After Dark, or what track should I reference? And I just be yourself and try and create something that's fresh. And, you know, that's the best way. And there's times I've heard a track and it's maybe been 60, 70% there. And I've heard, okay, this is potential. And I've worked with the artist behind the scene to bring it up to date and released it. I've done that on like so many tracks. So, you know, I'm always reading the demo emails. I'm always listening. And I'm always there for feedback if I think the track.
What is the address where people can send it to?
afterdarkdemos@gmail.com.
Well, easy does it. There you go, Hark Music. Make sure to send it over there. Yeah. Tom Silento, a little bit more of a nerdy question. How do you process your assets?
That's a tough one. I mean,
what is your go-to plugin for making your assets?
It used to be Vanguard, believe it or not, but now it doesn't even work on my computer.
it's too old.
Yeah, it's too old. Like a lot of plugins, it doesn't work anymore. But it's either the Virus TI or Logic's ES2.
Mm-hmm.
ES2 probably is my favorite go-to, but it's a bit thin. You have to put a lot of processing on it. Mm. I'll have like a bit of reverb, distortion.
That's the one plugin that overdrive. I wish that we could have in Ableton, is the ES2.
Yeah. So I just think the key with the acid is like, you know, overdrive and like obviously cutoff filter work. And that's really it. So
it's a lot of automation. So everything starts moving around.
Yeah. I think it's the automation is key. Like I think getting it right and getting it bang on and then bouncing
the resonance
out.
On the filter.
Just as soon as you get a good run, bounce it out as audio when you know it's done, because these things can just like have a mind of their own after a while. So it's kind of like getting a catch in the moment, really.
Yeah, bounce the audio and process it straight away, because otherwise you'll lose it.
Yeah.
The last one, Alex Celant wants to know, what's the message that you would want to communicate with your music? That's a good question. What do you want to get across?
I mean, like when I make uplifting stuff, especially vocal stuff, the lyrics are very, very important to me. They have to have like transparent message that I'm feeling at that time, or like Need You Here, for example, is written about my dad who passed away in 2020. So it was kind of like very personal track to me. And the whole track was based around that emotion, that time of grief, but finding sort of solace in music. And like, that's how that track was written.
And the track resonated with a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, it was in the top five last year.
Number five, yeah. So, I mean, for me, I'm very emotionally invested in the uplifting stuff. That's why I don't make very much uplifting, like vocals or anything. It has to tick all the boxes for me.
Yeah.
And the Tektron stuff, like I said, is just dance floor orientated. It's all about making people dance. And I know when I press play and when that kicks in, people have to go crazy. And that's always in my mind when I'm in the studio. So the message that I'm sending out with the Tektron stuff is like, go crazy. And the uplifting stuff is always like,
go cry.
Yeah.
No, that's not of course what I meant to say.
Yeah.
But it is kind of like stirring up emotions.
Yeah,
or make sure that something is very emotional to a lot of people so they can resonate.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is that you have to have that emotional connection to it, and you have to really feel that connection. And it's not easy to do, believe me. Like, you know yourself from being a producer that writing emotional music and getting that attachment is very tough. It's tough.
Very, very true. Well, thank you so much for answering all these questions. Bring the Noise coming out in August, and for the vinyl fans at heart, like myself, make sure to get a copy of the vinyl, and the CDs coming as well.
CD, vinyl, digital, some merch as well. There you can check out my Bandcamp page.
Yeah, Bandcamp. I saw it. The artwork is very cool, by the way.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, thank you once again for dropping by. Bring the Noise, Mr. Snyder. Thank you so much. See you next time for a new A State of Trance podcast. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. Check all previous episodes on YouTube or your favorite podcast portal. A State of Trance podcast.